Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza on this pre-recorded program via remote from Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Tuesday, December 22, 2020. The former British ambassador to South Sudan says more pressure is needed for the implementation of the country's peace agreement.
I left South Sudan frustrated that greater progress hadn't been made in the implementation of the peace agreement. I mean, in particular, sort of a proper formation of the transitional government.
And Sudanese activists monitor the implementation of the comprehensive peace agreement signed in Juba.
We would like to see into it that parties are able to establish the principles of transparency during the implementation period. The implementation process should be brought to the public opinion.
We will have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The former British ambassador to South Sudan says the international community should mount pressure on the South Sudan peace partners to speed up the implementation of the 2018 peace agreement. Ambassador Chris Trout says the implementation of the South Sudan peace agreement is very slow due to many challenges.
I developed a great affection for the country and its people and a really strong desire to see the peace process succeed. And I left South Sudan frustrated that greater progress hadn't been made in the implementation of the peace agreement. I mean, in particular, sort of a proper formation of the transitional government to allow us to then start to work in partnership with the government on chapters 4, 5, and 6 of the agreement, as well as just on chapters 1 and 2.
When journalists like us ask the peace partners, we end up hearing different narratives. For instance, when you speak to the government, they would always say they are implementing the agreement. When you speak to the SPLM-IO, they have always said the peace agreement is not being implemented. And opposition, like the South Sudan Opposition Alliance, known as SOA, when you ask them, they will say everything is going on well as planned. Kumbaya, what is your reading about the situation of the peace agreement in South Sudan?
I think we need to hold the parties collectively accountable for lack of progress. I mean, it is being implemented, but far, far slower than anyone anticipated. And that has delayed people in South Sudan from feeling the benefits of peace, what we call the peace dividend. And what it has done is it's undermined local government, which has made it harder for the international community to respond to the crises that South Sudan is facing, particularly the humanitarian crisis that has been highlighted in the international press over the last week.
Talking about the humanitarian situation in South Sudan, I saw your pictures in flooded areas of Jonglei State and your attempt to raise the awareness at the highest level about the plights of the people affected in Jonglei and other places in South Sudan. But it appears like the appeals fell on deaf ears, and there is still a lot of suffering in Jonglei State.
Yeah, you're right, John. There is a lot of suffering in Jonglei State, and I think that all of us need to ensure that the international response becomes more coherent. But the international community can only respond if the government is properly ensuring the security of humanitarian workers, the security of our supply lines, and the security of the supplies when delivered. So you really need this local level government. You need state ministers. You need county commissioners in order to ensure that the assistance that we are ready to provide can reach the people it is destined to get to. And we have found that this year with the conflict in Jonglei, it's been far harder to guarantee our access. And you've seen the numbers of humanitarian workers killed has continued to rise. And we are requesting urgent action to ensure that we can indeed help.
There is a commonly held belief by some South Sudanese who say the international community is holding the government of South Sudan with kids' gloves.
I don't think that's entirely true. I mean, I think that, you know, the international community is having fairly robust conversations with everyone in South Sudan to encourage greater progress in the implementation of the peace agreement. The difficulty is that, of course, our engagement also depends on the guarantors of the peace agreement taking some responsibility for encouraging implementation at a faster rate. And with the regional distractions, and I'm hoping that the IGAD summit will have reflected the need for urgency, but with other regional issues rising to the fore, it's been hard to get the focus onto South Sudan.
And in the backdrop of a situation where there is no focus, how would you rate the progress towards the implementation of the peace agreement? There are people who are already saying the agreement has collapsed.
No, I wouldn't agree with that. I think that you can look at sort of the fact that there are now in Juba the leaders of all of the different parties to the conflict in 2016-2017. There is collaboration between national ministers. And when I talk to people in the different clusters, they talked about how those are starting to work in enabling people to prioritize. And one thing that I would like to highlight is that there is some genuine progress, I think, being made on public sector financial management reform, which is absolutely critical for South Sudan to be able to reestablish its credibility with the international financial institutions. So there are elements of progress. So to say it's failed, I think, would be an exaggeration, but it is certainly not moving fast enough to be able to deliver the peace that people in South Sudan deserve.
If you are given an opportunity to leave a piece of advice to the person replacing you as the British ambassador to South Sudan, what would your advice be?
I think the advice is, one, to keep listening to voices in South Sudan, not just government, but civil society, the churches, others who are advocating reconciliation and progress in the peace agreement. Support the media in terms of their ability to hold leaders accountable for progress in the peace agreement and engage with the government in a constructive way, but nevertheless maintain pressure on all the parties to deliver the peace agreement that so much hope has been set upon. And in particular, what I would love to see is real progress on the naming of the transitional national legislature and state government appointments before Christmas, as well as the creation of the NUS.
Talking about the pressure on the government, some opposition groups who are sitting on the fence, I'm talking about groups like the National Salvation Front, have once accused diplomats like you for not putting the desired pressure on President Salva Kiir to end violence in the country.
I would disagree with that. I mean, the diplomats in Juba have a limited role, limited number of tools to use in their engagement. The only thing we can do is seek to remind the parties of their responsibility and seek to engage the regional guarantors in trying to hold the parties to account. And that's what I think ambassadors in Juba do.
Ambassador Chris, it appears you fell in love with the people of South Sudan. If there's anything that reminds you of the country, what would that be?
I have so many amazing memories of the country, of the kindness of the people. You've seen perhaps the reaction on Twitter to my departure, and that has given me great solace that while the situation has been difficult, people have retained their sense of humanity, which is quite inspiring.
That's Ambassador Chris Trout, the former British ambassador to South Sudan. He spoke with me from London over the weekend. A group of Sudanese civil society organizations have launched a peace monitoring mechanism to track the progress in the implementation of the Juba peace deal that was signed between the transitional government and various armed groups in October. A member of the civil society group says they intend to closely monitor the implementation process of the peace agreement and give updates to the public in a bid to hold the peace partners accountable. For VOA News, Michael Atit reports from Khartoum.
The 10 Sudanese civil society groups and media institutions that have teamed up to monitor the Sudan's peace implementation say they want to keep an eye on the parties responsible for implementing the Juba Agreement. Asad Al-Tahir, one of the leaders of the monitoring group, says parties to the deal should not be left alone during this implementation period. Al-Tahir says the decisions or actions of the parties to the agreement should be transparent.
We would like to see into it that parties are able to establish the principles of transparency during the implementation period. The implementation process should be brought to the public opinion. Our belief is that any transparency during this period would help in restoring lasting peace and stability in the country.
On October 3rd, the Sudanese government and the umbrella of 9 rebel groups signed a peace agreement in Juba, South Sudan, silencing guns in parts of Blue Nile, southern Kordofan, and Darfur. Al-Tahir says his monitoring group connects local communities with the parties that signed the agreement.
They need to have a say in any fateful decisions that are connected to war and peace in the country. We will be working in establishing facts about the implementation process and to look at the gains of the agreement.
Al-Tahir says he believes that it is the right of Sudanese to understand key provisions of the peace deal. He says the group will train local communities, especially those in war-affected areas, to be involved in the monitoring process.
They will be trained to understand the provision of the agreement so that they will be able to properly monitor the implementation process.
Ask whether the group will only monitor the peace implementation or the whole transitional period in the country, Al-Tahir says the success of the transitional period is connected to the implementation of lasting peace in the country.
Whole transition period is aimed at achieving a total democratic transformation in Sudan, but that cannot be achieved without lasting peace and stability in the country. So by monitoring the peace implementation process and ensuring that its provisions are fully implemented, we will be contributing to monitor the whole transitional period in Sudan.
Consultations are underway for the nomination of 3 more members to the Sovereign Council and 6 candidates for cabinet positions. The Peace Monitoring Group is calling on the parties to immediately establish a legislative council to provide oversight to the executive branch of the government during the transitional period. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Khartoum.
Human Rights Watch is calling for justice for 7 Sudanese protesters killed by security forces in October in the eastern town of Kassala. The unrest was triggered by a decision by the Sudanese Prime Minister Abdullah Hamdok to sack the governor of Kassala State, who comes from a minority group. Mohammed Osman is a researcher with the Human Rights Watch. He says Sudan's transitional government must bring all the perpetrators of abuses to justice and reform its security sector. For VOA News, Nabil Biagio has more from Washington.
Human Rights Watch released a report looking into the violent crackdown of street protests on October 15th in Sudan's Kassala State. The protests started after Sudanese Prime Minister Abdullah Hamdok fired Kassala's controversial governor Ammar Saleh, who was appointed in July. Mohammed Osman, a researcher with Human Rights Watch, says his organization was able to document cases of excessive use of force, including lethal force, by the Rapid Support Forces, the Army, and the Central Reserve Police, who were deployed to do crowd control.
The excessive use of force resulted in the killing of 7 protesters. 5 of them were killed in front of Kassala Hospital, for instance, in which they were attacked by elements of the Rapid Support Forces. In all of these killings that we documented, the forensic reports indicate that they sustained lethal gunshots in the upper parts of the body. So basically, the report rounding up cases in which security forces resorted to excessive use of force, failing to uphold and respect freedom of assembly and the right to life.
Sudan's information minister announced the day after the crackdown that the Attorney General's office was opening an investigation into the events. Osman says Sudan must ensure that justice is done and that the perpetrators are held to account.
Under international law, any state has a duty to respect and protect human rights. The Sudanese government is no exception to that. the fact that these violations committed by officials that put Sudan under obligation to thoroughly investigate and prosecute perpetrators. What we see here, unfortunately, that the victims and their families in Kassala, they have been very clear from day one that they want justice. However, they're joining a very long list of other victims and families in Sudan, not only in terms of the past crimes committed by al-Bashir regime, but even looking into, for example, victims and the families of the dispersal of the city on June 3rd, that they've still been waiting justice.
Osman says despite repeated commitments received from Sudan's transitional government to investigate and punish crimes committed by armed forces in different parts of Sudan, very little has been done, including the investigation into the violent crackdown on the June 3, 2019 sit-in when more than 100 civilians were killed.
We see numerous committees being formed by authorities, but we are not seeing any substantial outcome. And that's definitely very worrying because the issue here that justice has to be seen. And as also people would say, justice delayed is just denied. So if the authorities are actually genuine about the demands of the revolution, the transitional demands of the revolution to establish justice and uphold rights, they're not doing this right so far. We are not seeing any indicator that this is coming on the top of their list of priorities.
Osman says Sudan's government must make sure that regular forces do not receive immunity from prosecution when it comes to human rights abuses.
Seeing groups like the RSF and army doing what law enforcement would do, we are seeing these forces with their own record of abuses from counterinsurgency in the conflict areas all the way to June 3rd, doing something they're not trained for. There is an absolute important and critical issue here, which is the security sector reform.
Osman says Sudan must reform its entire security sector so that regular forces and law enforcement comply with national and international norms of human rights. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio in Washington.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. Coming up, Kenyan doctors go on strike. Find out why after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
how can you promote tourism within your country amongst your fellow citizens?
By sponsoring or organizing trips for schools and others, because there are some people who don't have money to go to such places.
Telling people about how our culture and history is, through that I can promote.
By having friendly activities available, like affordable costs of travel, food and accommodation.
Maybe by posting on the social media about the tourism activities happening in the country, as well as the places that people can visit. Places I know, such as some in Mangochi, maybe in Mulanje, by putting that on the social media.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America, and in our Tuesday health segment, we take a look at doctors in Kenya. Kenyan doctors have joined clinical officers and nurses in a nationwide strike on Monday that is likely to make it harder for patients to get treatment. Doctors called a strike after talks with the government over pay and COVID-19 protective gear broke down. For VOA News, Mohammed Yusuf reports from Nairobi.
Kenya's health facilities are facing a crisis after doctors joined other health workers to demand better pay, medical insurance coverage, and better protective equipment to help them combat the coronavirus pandemic. Chibanzi Mwachonda is the Secretary General of the Kenya Medical Practitioners, Pharmacists and Dentists Union. He attended the funeral of a doctor who died of the coronavirus. Speaking to journalists in Kisii County while attending the burial service, Mwachonda said the government is yet to accept their demands.
The doctors across the country today can no longer wait. We will not engage in hazardous and dangerous work environments. We will not engage without assurance of our treatment assurance of compensation to the young families that most doctors have, and assurance of employment. There's no point in training doctors and not employing them. So today begins a nationwide strike notice by KMPDU. We remain available. And after this, we hope that we will engage come tomorrow to find resolutions to this matter.
The doctor was the 13th union member to die of the coronavirus, according to officials. The strike was supposed to start 2 weeks ago, but the union postponed the planned work stoppage after the intervention of the Parliamentary Health Committee, which urged more time for dialogue. The Doctors and Dentists Union joins clinical officers and nurses who began to strike 2 weeks ago. The Health Ministry has threatened to fire medical workers if the strike continues. Wycliffe Oparanya is Kakamega County Governor and Council of County Governors Chairperson. He says it is unfair for doctors to go on strike during the pandemic and that appropriate action will be taken against striking medics.
If they have decided to go on strike, also let us also take stern action against them. We shall remove them from the payroll. I have directed that we cut out recruitment of other nurses.
Mwachonda says the only way they will go back to work is if their demands are met.
No amount of intimidation, no amount of threats will make doctors go back to work. And I will say it very clearly and again. Court orders will not stop this strike. Court orders will not make doctors stop from dying. Court orders will not stop infections or reduce infections amongst the doctors. It is our lives, and we have been pushed to the wall. We gave 21 days. We extended for a further 14 days. So a total of 35 days. Decisions now have to be made on these matters.
The Clinical Officers Union has been engaged in talks with government officials to find ways to end the strike. The union chairman, Peterson Washira, says it is not safe for them to return to work. In 2017, a doctor's strike lasted 400 days before an agreement was reached to end the work stoppage. Mohamed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
The Rwandan military says it has deployed what it calls force protection troops to Central African Republic as tension increases ahead of the country's December 27 election. Russia has also sent several hundred troops. The Rwandan military says the deployment is in response to the targeting of Rwanda's defense forces contingent with the UN peacekeeping force by rebels supported by former President Francois Bozizi. The opposition has called for postponement of the Sunday elections. However, the incumbent president has called on voters to defy threats by rebels and vote on Sunday. Gete Nyiragabo is a Rwandan attorney and an independent political analyst. He spoke with my colleague, James Batty.
So Rwanda is one of the biggest contingents of the United Nations Stabilizing Mission in Central African Republic. Rwanda contributes troops to the United Nations Stabilizing Peacekeeping Mission. And Rwanda has been stationed there for several years now as a peacekeeping mission. Now, because elections are coming up, one of the candidates, former President Francois Bozize, has rebel groups that are coming in from outside of Central African Republic. And these rebel movements have been targeting Rwandan troops because Rwandan troops are known in Central African Republic to be intransigent when it comes to protecting civilians. This is based on the responsibility to protect that Rwanda believes in as a country which suffered the genocide, in which the international community did not intervene. Rwanda makes it a point to protect civilians against armed militias and armed groups. So this one particular group has been targeting Rwandan peacekeeping troops, UN troops, because when Rwanda operates in Central African Republic, they operate under the Blue Helmet Chapter 5 mandate of the United Nations. And therefore, these rebel movements are not happy with such a stabilizing mission. So they've been targeting Rwandan troops. Therefore, Rwanda decided to beef up its force in Central African Republic by bringing in Rwandan special forces to go and strengthen its contingent in Central African Republic.
President Paul Kagame, did he speak to the country about the additional deployment?
Absolutely. He spoke both to the country and to the United Nations. Remember, sir, this is not a Rwandan initiative. Rwanda is merely a contributor to the United Nations stabilizing mission. So Rwandan troops do not have a mandate given to them by the Rwandan government, but by the United Nations. And for troops of the United Nations to come into a country, they have to have permission from the said country. In fact, Rwandan troops have been protecting the president's security and republican institutions. And now Rwandan troops are expected to ensure the safety of the electoral process.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Hello, I'm VOA Health Correspondent Linor Moudou. The World Health Organization and U.S. Centers for Disease Control say coughing and sneezing can spread COVID-19. Physical distancing, staying at least 1 meter away from people outside your family, can protect everyone. For more information, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
That's our show for this Tuesday. We would like to welcome our listeners on Radio Eastern 94 FM in Yei Town to the family of VOA affiliate stations across South Sudan. We are glad residents of Yei Town are enjoying VOA programs. We now leave you with the Colonel Mido and the song Dafamal. Listening to Colonel Mido with the song Dafamal. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for allowing us into your homes, vehicles, and phones. Remember to always wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, and wear a mask when you're in public places. Do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers because there is no cure for coronavirus. Join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.